senior IRGC commander warns if Israel takes any action against Iran's nuclear sites, Regime will face a more powerful response in kind. At least 9 people are killed in fresh Israeli attacks in Gaza, where the death toll is nearing 34,000. And Palestinians denounce the U.S. for vetoing a resolution that called for Palestine's full UN membership. Our top story, Iran's warned in case of any Israeli military attack on the country's nuclear sites, it'll give a response in kind to the regime's aggression. Have a listen. Ahmed Haq Talab is commander of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps unit responsible for safeguarding Iran's nuclear sites. He said Iran has identified all Israeli nuclear facilities and powerful Iranian missiles are ready to destroy specific targets at any moment. Haq Talab added that Iran may reconsider its nuclear doctrine and policies in case of any Israeli aggression against its nuclear facilities. He said Iran has always had the power to attack regime's nuclear bases, but has remained committed to international regulations that prohibit such attacks. Haq Talab stressed, as the leader of the Islamic Revolution has said before, the days of hit and run are over for Israel. He noted, in case of an Israeli strike on Iran, the country's response will be powerful and destructive. And now here's a number of more known Israeli military sites that could be possible targets for Iran's armed forces in case of Israel further escalating tensions.
Negev Nuclear Research Center, Dimona. The Shimon Peres Negev Nuclear Research Center is an Israeli nuclear installation located in the Negev Desert, about 13 kilometers southeast of the city of Dimona. Israel's plutonium production and extraction facilities, along with other weapons-related infrastructure, are situated there. Ilaban is Israel's second weapons storage facility. Tactical nuclear shells and landmines are among its contents. Kfar Zecharia, Israel's suspected nuclear missile base and bomb storage facility. Nahal Sorek. This one is the equivalent of the U.S. National Weapons Laboratories. The lab handles weapons design and construction, as well as research. Yodefat is a suspected nuclear weapons assembly facility. Tirosh, reportedly one of 2 Israeli nuclear weapons storage facilities. It is speculated that Tirosh is a strategic weapons storage site, while Ilaban is a tactical weapons storage site. Rafael Factory. Rafael has been responsible for the assembly of Israel's missiles.
Spokesperson for Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps rejected Israel's allegation about damage to the Dimona nuclear plant during Iran's recent punitive operation. Brigadier General Ramadan Sharif says claim is part of the regime's psychological warfare. He added that Dimona power plant was not among targets of Iran's retaliatory operation. He said regime's allegation was nothing but a big lie which was aimed at deceiving public opinion. His remarks came after Israeli media claimed at least one missile hit a building in the Dimona plant during Iran's operation. Regimes threatened to give a response to Iran's retaliatory operation, which hit its military bases. Iran's vowed to respond in kind to any Israeli attack on its nuclear sites. Explosions heard in the Iranian city of Isfahan earlier Friday were due to activation of air defenses in the central city. That, according to a senior army figure in Isfahan, 2nd Brigadier General Siavash Mihandus says air defenses in Isfahan fired at suspicious objects. He said no damage was caused, and earlier informed sources said Iran's air defenses shot down 3 quadcopters over Isfahan. They said no incident occurred in the country's military or nuclear sites. The International Atomic Energy Agency also confirmed there has been no damage to Iran's nuclear facilities. According to Iran's Civil Aviation Organization, all airports throughout the country have been brought back to normal functioning after flights were temporarily suspended. Reports of explosions come amid Israel's threats that it will respond to Iran's punitive strike launched on the regime's targets over the weekend. The strike was in retaliation for Israel's attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria on the 1st of April. Antoine Asadi, an academic and political analyst, joined us earlier and spoke about the blast in Isfahan and gave us some context on it.
We know that the Israelis had reportedly warned Biden administration earlier on Thursday that they will have kind of attack or strike on Iran in the next 24 or 48 hours. Whether the events this morning are the response of Israelis have been talking about is too early to say, I think, but at all events, as you said, the situation currently speaking looks quite calm, no sign of explosion or injury, but quite opposite to what we see in the as a reality on the ground is the media reports by the Israelis and their Western allies in the mainstream Western media that says these mini quadcopters have targeted important places and caused destruction. Well, it comes all from the disastrous climatic situation in which the Israelis are located. They are actually exhausted by failure in war in Gaza over 6 months of, disastrous failed attempt to defeat Hamas. While on the other hand, they did not expect such a retaliatory attack from Iran taking place at this scale. So Iran also said that there is this sort of idea that there is no interest in further escalation, but at the time being, we know that the previous attack was limited in scale, while the next is expected to be further extended.
And now, over 6 months on, the Israeli army continues its campaign of death and destruction in Gaza, where more people are falling victim to unrelenting attacks. At least 9 people were killed and several injured in fresh attacks throughout the besieged enclave. There are also reports of 15 people missing under rubble. Now, attacks hit 2 different areas of Gaza City, as well as a Nusayrat refugee camp in the center of the strip. Death toll from Israel's campaign of genocide in Gaza has now risen to nearly 34,000 since early October. Most of the victims have been women and children, and thousands of Palestinians are still unaccounted for and presumed buried under rubble. Israeli war has also caused worsening humanitarian crisis in Gaza, where almost the entire population is facing hunger. We want to Abu Musabe join us earlier from the central Gaza city of Deir el-Balah with an update.
The last night was brutal and vehement for the Palestinian civilians across all areas of Gaza Strip, basically Gaza City, whereas the Israeli warplanes continued decimating Gaza City with more relentless airstrikes. And the Ashat refugee camp, a Palestinian residential building, was completely destroyed after the Israeli warplanes carried out several airstrikes. At least 4 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed over the attack, while dozens were injured. In the meantime, Sheikh Ridwan neighborhood also was hit relentlessly after the Israeli occupation forces launched several airstrikes. Another residential building actually was destroyed. At least four Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed as well. In the meantime, when it comes to Al-Sabra neighborhood, the headquarters of the Gaza Community College was completely flattened to the ground due to the relentless and the fierce Israeli airstrikes hitting that area. While when it comes to the northern part of Gaza Strip, basically Jabalia refugee camp, the Israeli warplanes continued and resumed their airstrikes against the eastern part of Jabalia refugee camp. Another residential building was destroyed and leveled to the ground as well. In the Tal Zatar neighborhood, which is located in the eastern part of Jabalia refugee camp. In the meantime, when it comes to the central area of Gaza Strip, here in Deir el-Balah city and Al-Maghazi and Al-Burej refugee camp, they were under heavy bombardments of the Israeli artillery shelling that was maintained against those areas all the night.
The Palestinian government and Hamas condemned the United States for blocking Palestine's bid for full UN membership. The resistance movement Hamas denounced the U.S. for using its veto power to block the bid. Hamas said U.S. move is in line with its continued support for Israel, which the movement said has made the regime more isolated internationally. The Palestinian Authority also denounced the veto as unfair, unethical, and unjustifiable. It emphasized the U.S. veto defies the will of the international community. Palestine's UN envoy also said that UN membership is a necessary step to reverse the injustice inflicted upon Palestinians for decades.
The fact that this resolution did not pass will not break our will. And it will not defeat our determination. We will not stop in our effort. The state of Palestine is inevitable. It is real.
Mansour added the Palestinians will continue efforts to become a full UN member. The UN Security Council held a vote on Palestine's membership on Thursday. Britain and Switzerland abstained, while 12 other council members voted yes. This was the second Palestinian attempt for full UN membership. Palestine is currently a non-member observer state. Its full membership has to be approved by the Security Council and at least two-thirds of the General Assembly. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has released footage of its Thursday operation targeting the headquarters of the Israeli Army's Brigade 91 at the Branit Barracks. The movement says it used one of its Burkan missiles, which has a heavy warhead, to hit the regime's barracks. This was one of 11 anti-Israeli operations carried out by Hezbollah on Thursday. The movement has conducted several major attacks on Israeli military sites in recent days. On Wednesday, a missile and drone operation left at least 19 Israeli soldiers injured in a new reconnaissance command center in Arab al-Aramsheh. Yemen's Ansarullah leader says Iran's retaliatory attack on Israel has changed a long-standing equation of the regime's hit-and-run strategy.
The operation, when it comes to its importance, it is that it established the equation of responding to the Israeli enemy at the time where the enemy and its partners were striving to establish the equation of invading or attacking in the Arab world and elsewhere. The Israeli enemy, for tens of years, got used to striking Arab countries, countries of Muslims, and not to receive any retaliation. This happened. It happened in Iraq, it happened in Sudan, it happened in various Arab countries. The Israeli enemy would strike targets for tens of years, and no one would dare retaliate militarily. Most of the time, sometimes there would be a complaint to the UN or to the Security Council. So establishing the equation of a strong military response, this is something very important at the time where the enemy wants to preserve the equation of being allowed to attack, whereby all of the Islamic Ummah, all the countries in the Arab world and elsewhere would be open for attack for the Israeli enemy, whereby they could do anything they want without receiving any retaliation. Also establishing the rules of engagement. If they attack, there will be a strong response and a decisive response, and their aggression will not go unanswered. This is something very important. After the
enemies. Addressing a Yemeni people in a televised address, Abdulmalik al-Houthi hailed Iran's response to the Israeli attack on its embassy in Damascus. He said Israel and its Western allies tried to downplay the significance of the operation after failing to prevent Iran's response. Al-Houthi, without naming a specific country, condemned some Arab states for protecting Israel during that operation. Elsewhere in his remarks, the Yemeni leader said his country will continue its operations in the Red and Arabian Seas until a total ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
On late Saturday, April 13th, the Islamic Republic of Iran began Operation True Promise by launching explosive drones and firing missiles at Israeli-occupied territory. The Iranian salvo of more than 300 drones and missiles came almost 2 weeks after Israel targeted Iran's consulate in Damascus that resulted in the assassination of a number of high-ranking Iranians, including General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, one of Iran's most senior commanders in its Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, and Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi, his deputy. Operation True Promise was Tehran's first direct attack on the Israeli regime after a long period of strategic patience, a new chapter in the history of the region. A few hours before Iran launched Operation True Promise, we asked political analyst Mr. Sadullah Zarei about the possibility of a direct action by Iran against the Israeli regime.
Biden,
U.S. President Joe Biden, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and other top officials in the United States, as well as in Israel, have said that Iran would respond to the attack on its consulate in Damascus. Some have predicted that the response would be severe. When they say that the Islamic Republic would respond, it means that they are confessing to Tehran's ability to retaliate. So, Iran, in the eyes of its enemies, is both willing to and capable of taking action in retaliation against what the Israeli regime did to its diplomatic mission in Syria.
Iran's decision to retaliate against Israel from its own soil has raised many eyebrows, even as the attacks appear to be carefully calibrated to avoid a full-scale war.
We are seeking to deal a proper blow to Israel so that the regime would forget all about such reckless actions against Iran in the future. At the same time, we are not going to fan the flames of war. We don't want to escalate tensions in the region. So our strikes would be limited and calculated. In other words, we are going to take revenge without trying to drag the whole region into an all-out war. Our main aim is to deter the Israeli regime from threatening our interests in the region.
A direct attack by Iran on Israel was not believed to be on the cards. The Iranians had previously made clear that they were not seeking a war with Israel. In fact, Iran had never responded with such force to previous attacks, including many covert Israeli operations on its soil. This is Mr. Morteza Makki, a political analyst based in Tehran.
After much speculation over the past 2 weeks, the Islamic Republic of Iran eventually took retaliatory action against Israel by sending tens of drones and missiles towards the regime's critical points. Iran's action has obviously changed the game. The Israelis were under the impression that Tehran would take action indirectly, through the resistance axis, for example, and would not put aside its strategic patience. But they were wrong, and as a result, the direct attack came as a shock to them.
Iran has plausible arguments for the retaliatory attack, which was a legitimate response to Israel's terrorist attack on the Islamic Republic's diplomatic premises in the Syrian capital. According to a statement issued by the Islamic Republic's mission to the United Nations, Iran's military action was based on Article 51 of the United Nations Charter concerning legitimate defense in response to the Zionist regime's aggression against our diplomatic premises in Damascus. Mr. Ahmad Momini Arad, professor of international law at Tehran University, has more to say.
The military action the Israeli regime took against Iran's consulate on April 1st is, according to international laws, an action against Iran's sovereignty. It's an illegal action under international laws. In this case, according to Article 51 of the UN Charter, Iran has the right of self-defense because an armed attack has occurred against the country. Prior to Operation True Promise, Iran had frequently asked the Security Council to take necessary measures against Israel's illegal action. But unfortunately, the Council did nothing in this regard. So Iran upheld its right of self-defense by launching an operation that was more defensive in nature than being retaliatory.
Top Iranian commanders warned Israel that the country would face a bigger attack if it retaliates against overnight drone and missile strikes. In the words of the commander-in-chief of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, Major General Hossein Salami, the Zionist regime must stop its past behavior and learn from this attack. If the Zionist regime shows any response, our reaction will certainly be much harsher based on this new experience we have gained from their capabilities. Adding, from now on, if the Zionist regime attacks our interests, assets, figures, and citizens at any point, it will face counterattack from within the Islamic Republic of Iran. Mr. Mehdi Khorsan enumerated a list of subversive actions taken by Israel against the Islamic Republic over the past years.
Assassinating our nuclear scientists, taking acts of sabotage in our nuclear sites, abortive attempt against Barakat Pharmaceutical Group, supporting secessionists in border areas, orchestrating arson attacks in Mahidash bases in Kermanshah, attacking nuclear facilities in Karaj, Natanz and other places, recruiting spies and financing terrorists. These are some actions the Israeli regime has taken against Iran over the past four decades.
Operation True Promise was unprecedented in many aspects. It was the first direct military action taken by Tehran against the Israeli regime. But can it be a game changer? Mr. Khorsan told us that Iran's first direct action against Israel was inevitable.
When the regime crossed our red lines and attacked our consulate for the first time, which is tantamount to attacking our soil, we had no option but to take a strong action. We had to shatter the regime's illusions that Iran wasn't afraid of it, and the country's strategic patience was out of fear or weakness. The fact is, whatever the regime had done prior to its attack on Iran's consulate did not require Tehran to take a direct military action against the regime.
The scale of Iran's attack, the diversity of locations it targeted, and weapons it used forced Israel to uncover the majority of anti-missile technologies the U.S. and the regime have across the region. A big achievement at low cost. Tehran did not use any weapons Israel didn't know it had. It just used a lot of them. Iran likely now has almost a full map of what Israel's missile systems looks like, as well as where in Jordan and the Persian Gulf the U.S. has installations. It also knows how long it takes to prepare them or how Israeli society responds. This is a huge strategic cost to Israel. While some Arab states are now being blasted by their people, particularly the Jordanian monarchy, for not doing anything to protect Gazans, but then going all out to protect Israel. Mr. Mackey told us why Tehran launched drones and missiles simultaneously.
Israel's system is multi-layer. The first layer is supposed to intercept rockets, the second layer to intercept mid-range missiles, and the third layer to intercept long-range missiles. By sending drones, Iran aimed at disrupting the first layer, and by sending missiles of different ranges, Iran managed to change the second and the third layers of the Iron Dome.
Iran can now reverse engineer all the intelligence it has gathered from this attack for future attacks if the occasion arises. That's why the U.S. and Israel will have to redesign their current model, which has been compromised. Before Iran's operation, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was moved to a bunker in Al-Quds. Zionist soldier vacations were canceled ahead of the attack, and all reservists were ordered to report for duty. Israeli forces issued warnings to settlers to avoid large gatherings while remaining close to shelters. Meanwhile, Israeli officials pleaded with their allies to do anything to stop Iran. From now on, the Israeli regime has to do all these things before taking any reckless action against Iranian interests.
The action Iran took against Israel showed just part of the country's defense capabilities. Iran has hypersonic missiles that can reach Israel in minutes. If Iran had used them, the blow to the regime would have been much more crushing. Over the past 2 weeks, Israel was a bundle of nerves, and you know, Netanyahu cannot keep going like this. In case of another attack by Israel, Iran would not wait for 2 weeks. Its response would be swift and severe. The fact is, we have entered a new phase of tensions in the region. Israel and its allies need to reconsider their plans. Any misstep can throw the whole region into further chaos, tension, and war. And don't forget, the victims of this situation would not be just regional countries, but also Western countries that have many interests in the region.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more to be said, but first a quick media review to give other outlets a chance to get a word in.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of this program. Here, we'll go over some important news headlines. Iran rolls dice in conflict with Israel. Financial Times writes, it was just before 2 a.m. when the barrage of Iranian drones and missiles swarmed over the Israeli sky. Israelis, who had waited anxiously for several hours after first being swarmed, that the arsenal of projectiles was heading their way, scurried to safe rooms or bomb shelters. After more than four decades of hostility between the arch foes, Israel was for the first time under a direct attack from Iran. It puts the Middle East ever nearer the full-blown regional conflict that Western and Arab leaders have feared since Hamas's October 7 attack. Israel warded off a huge Iranian attack, but that success is not the same as victory. After years in which Israel threatened relentlessly to target Iran's nuclear facilities and indeed engage in a series of operations to set back Iran's nuclear program, it was Iran that launched the first major attack between the two enemies. It bragged that it was able to scare the Israeli public for days ahead of the much-touted assault. And it now claims to have changed the equation, warning that future Israeli strikes on Iranian territory, including its international diplomatic premises, will henceforth again be met by Iranian retaliatory strikes on Israel. True promise. Why and how did Iran launch a historic attack on Israel? Iran has just launched the largest ever drone strike in the world and the biggest missile attack in its history. Al Jazeera writes, the attack was mainly aimed at strengthening Iran's deterrence, which critics said had been compromised after increasingly confrontational policies and military strikes by the United States and its allies across the region, especially following the January 2020 assassination of top general Qasem Soleimani in Iraq. Iranian officials also appear to have exercised a degree of strategic patience after the late December assassination of another top IRGC commander in Syria, Razi Mousavi, in an Israeli air raid amid the fallout of the war on Gaza. In action, lower-grade strikes are being content with military action through the axes of resistance of aligned groups across the region would, in this vein, be viewed as too costly for Iran both locally and abroad. Iran's attack seemed planned to minimize casualties while maximizing spectacle. According to CNN, a decades-long shadow war burst out into the open overnight as Iranian drones and missiles lit up the night sky in Israel and the occupied West Bank. Tehran's operation was highly choreographed, apparently designed to minimize casualties while maximizing spectacle. For some 4 hours, the world held its breath as weapons whizzed through the night sky. There were balls of fire hovering overhead as onlookers across three different countries filmed images that seemed to hearken the start of an all-out war. Why Israel's attack on Iranian consulate in Syria was a game-changer. The Guardian writes, the large-scale attack by Iran on Israel may have passed with relatively little damage, but it marks a significant transformation in the conflict between the two enemies. A war that has long been fought through proxies, assassinations, and strikes away from Israeli soil, often in third countries, has spilled into the open.
To save its face, the Israeli regime has been trying to play down the significance of Operation True Promise by distorting the realities. But denying the damage doesn't undo the damage, does it? Commenting on Israel's response to the attack, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu posted on X, "We intercepted, we repelled, together we shall win." There's no doubt that Iran could carry out an operation in a large scale, but the attack was limited to the military bases of the Zionist regime, from the Golan Heights to the Negev Desert, that were used in the terrorist attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus.
پایگاه هوایی نواتیم اسرائیل که تقریبا در نیمه جنوبی سرزمین‌های اشغالی قرار داره.
The Nevatim Air Base is one of the most strategic bases of Israel and home to F-35 aircraft. By targeting this base, Iran sent a very important message to the Israeli regime that we are not afraid to launch direct attacks from our own soil. On the contrary, we can fearlessly send swarms of drones and missiles toward Israel, challenging its Iron Dome and striking our targets vehemently. We are ready for the ultimate goal of annihilating the child-killing regime.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian said on Sunday that Iran gave neighboring countries and Israel's ally, the United States, 72 hours' notice it would launch the strikes. It means that the Islamic Republic was not after a surprise attack or dealing a bloody blow to Israel, but giving the regime a serious ultimatum. Thanks to the notice, Israel could prepare itself with the help of the U.S. and some other allies for Iran's attack. And yet, the regime was not fully successful in intercepting the drones and missiles. And it means a surprise full-force attack by Iran would land the regime in serious trouble. According to General Salami, dozens of ballistic and cruise missiles managed to break into deep layers of Israel's seemingly safe air defense system, impact the aerial coalition between the U.S., France, and Israel, and reach the designated targets. We asked Mr. Zari about the potential consequences of Iran's retaliatory attack. He said that Israel should be more afraid of them, not Iran.
I've got a simple question to ask. Can an impotent regime like Israel stand against the Islamic Republic of Iran? The answer is no. How can a regime which is unable to defeat a resistance group like Hamas defeat Iran? As you know, Hamas is just a resistance group in Gaza, which has been under siege for years. The group has very limited facilities. It has no armed vehicles, no navy, no air force, no classic army, and yet the Israeli regime has failed to defeat this group over the past 6 or 7 months.
The Iranian missile and drone attacks came as a shock to settlers in the occupied territories, since the Israeli media had tried to pacify them for weeks, claiming that Iran's intention for retaliation was not true. However, at the stroke of midnight, both the Israeli media and settlers were gripped by fear. The operation has opened a new chapter for Iran in the fight against the Israeli regime. It included at least 4 waves of drone attacks. The retaliatory military operation also included the launch of a series of cruise and ballistic missiles, which were reportedly accompanied by simultaneous drone and missile strikes by the axis of resistance groups from Iraq, Yemen, and Lebanon. According to official reports, Shahed 136 kamikaze drones that carry a relatively small warhead weighing some 50 kilograms were used in the attack on Israel. Moreover, the Shahed 238, which is powered by a turbojet rather than the propeller on the 136 model, was also used in the attack. The Emad long-range ballistic missile and the Pavid cruise missile were used to attack Israel. Iran also possesses Fatah, a hypersonic ballistic missile that could theoretically arrive in Israel in as little as 7 minutes, along with a cruise missile variant of the same family. There was no indication the missiles were used in the early Sunday attacks. After all, it was a slap on the wrist, and Iran's response to any further military action by Israel will be much greater. Iranian Parliament Speaker Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf said, "The Iranian forces' deterrence and regret-inducing response delighted the hearts of every Iranian who cares about our honored country's security and glory." In a phone call with Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on the attack night, U.S. President Joe Biden made clear the U.S. would not participate in any offensive operations against Iran, an implicit acceptance that a military confrontation with Iran would cost both Israel and the U.S. dearly.
The Americans know that they are very vulnerable in the region, and they don't want to engage with Iran. Needless to say, we are not after war with the Americans either. The other day, a White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby said that Israel's attack on Iran's consulate was legitimate, but in the same breath, he said that the action was reckless and against the United States policies. Why did he add that to his remarks? Because he is afraid of his country being dragged into war with Iran. The Americans didn't have a good time in Iraq or in Afghanistan, and they don't want to repeat the same mistake. And you know, these two countries are not comparable with Iran.
Operation True Promise has mocked Israel's invincibility myth, stripping the regime of its deterrence illusion. The Islamic Republic of Iran, under the leadership of Ayatollah Khamenei, has once again given a new momentum to the Palestinian cause.
With the great strength Iran showed, the country conveyed the message that we are capable of launching massive operations and any attack on our soil or consulates will be faced with crushing responses. The operation, in fact, sought to restore Iran's deterrence. I have to say that over the past years, Iran has been acting in a rational way and in accordance with international laws. It has never sought to begin war or open up new fronts in the region. Whatever the Islamic Republic has done so far has been defensive and preemptive.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had in his Eid al-Fitr sermon vowed to punish the Israeli regime for the mistake of targeting the Iranian diplomatic mission in Damascus. He made a similar warning a day after the attack was carried out earlier this month, saying the regime would be punished. The Islamic Revolution Guard Corps dubbed the operation True Promise to show Iran leader's seriousness on his vows of punishment for attacks by Israel and others.
By targeting Iran's consulate in Damascus, Israel tried to challenge Iran's deterrence. Given what Ayatollah Khamenei said at Eid al-Fitr sermons, it became clear that Iran would not let Israel go unpunished this time. Now, the region should brace itself for new military and political developments. What would be these developments? It all depends on how the Israeli regime would react to Iran's retaliatory attack and the stance the Americans are going to adopt.
Shortly after the retaliation, Iranians took to the streets at Palestine Square and in front of the University of Tehran in the capital, waving national flags and chanting slogans in support of the retaliatory attack. Similar demonstrations were held in other parts of the country. Rallies were also held on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the holy occupied city of Al-Quds, where Palestinians came out to celebrate after hearing news of the Iranian retaliation. People also took to the streets throughout various cities across the world, celebrating Iran's decisive retaliation against the Israeli regime.
Operation True Promise was recorded as the biggest missile operation as well as the biggest drone operation in the world. The operation cheered up the people of Palestine, the people of the region, and the people of the world, all the freedom-seeking people around the globe who take pity on the children and women of Gaza. The operation was designed in a way so as to avoid non-military targets and therefore collateral damage. It was a very precise and calculated operation.
On the eve of Iran's retaliatory attack, Israel suspended the ground invasion of the city of Rafah in southern Gaza because it did not know how, where, and when Iran would give its retaliatory response. The night Iran carried out Operation True Promise, no one lost his or her life to Israel's indiscriminate airstrikes as the regime was busy defending itself against Iran's retaliation. Iran, under the severest sanctions, did what the Arab coalition had failed to do over the past 7 decades, to humiliate the Israeli regime and scare the life out of it. The rules of engagement have changed. Operation True Promise marks the beginning of a new era when the regime can no longer get away with murder. From now on, the regime's first mistake could be its last one. And there's absolutely harm in trying it. We asked Dr. Momin Yerod if the Israeli regime has the right to launch a retaliatory attack against Iran in response to its retaliatory attack.
If we consider the case from the point of view of international laws, no, the regime has no right to attack Iran again. But the fact is, the regime has never abided by international laws and norms since its formation. It has crossed all the red lines and it has committed crimes unprecedented in history. The regime's history is brimmed with all kinds of violations of international laws, of human rights, you name it. It has a track record of illegal occupation of Palestine, invasion, killing, genocide, assassination, displacement of people, destruction of homes, and so on and so forth.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do join us again to see what else is on. Till next time, take care.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant fact
Imamat yek asl zinda dar tarikh Islam
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned. There are four groups of people when entering on the Day of Judgment. One group will have easy reckoning and the other group a hard one. Yet another group will enter paradise without reckoning, and there is a group who will enter hellfire without reckoning. We must know to which group we belong to. Those who are happy with their records of deeds will show their record to others and will tell them the secret to their success, which is abstaining from haram deeds. In Ayah 25 of Surah Al-Haqqah, we read, But as for him who is given his book in his left hand, he will say, I wish I had not been given my book. Such people wish they have not been given the record of deeds, since their book of deeds is full of dark spots. Such people had everything in this world, but they abused their power and wealth, and they oppressed the rights of others. A real pleasure and happiness becomes clear on the Day of Judgment, and everything in this world is transient. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.